This is Audible.
Blackstone Audio presents Library of Souls, the third novel of Miss Peregrine's Peculiar Children by Ransom Riggs. This book is read by Kirby Hayborn. The ends of the earth, the depths of the sea, the darkness of time. You have chosen all three. E. M. Forster. Chapter 1. The monster stood not a tongue's length away, eyes fixed on our throats, shriveled brain crowded with fantasies of murder. Its hunger for us charged the air. Hollows are born lusting after the souls of peculiars, and here we were, arrayed before it like a buffet, bite-sized Addison bravely standing his ground at my feet, tail at attention, Emma moored against me for support, still too dazed from the impact to make more than a match flame, our backs laddered against the wrecked phone booth. Beyond our grim circle, the underground station looked like the aftermath of a nightclub bombing. Steam from burst pipes shrieked forth in ghostly curtains. Splintered monitors swung broken-necked from the ceiling. A sea of shattered glass spread all the way to the tracks, flashing in the hysterical strobe of red emergency lights like an acre-wide disco ball. We were boxed in, a wall hard to one side and glass shin-deep on the other, two strides from a creature whose only natural instinct was to disassemble us, and yet it made no move to close the gap. It seemed rooted to the floor, swaying on its heels like a drunk or a sleepwalker, death's head drooping, its tongues a nest of snakes I'd charmed to sleep. Me, I'd done that. Jacob Portman, boy nothing from nowhere, Florida. It was not currently murdering us, this horror made of gathered dark and nightmares harvested from sleeping children, because I had asked it not to. Told it in no uncertain terms, to unwrap its tongue from around my neck. Back off, I'd said. Stand, I'd said, in a language made of sounds I hadn't known a human mouth could make. And miraculously it had, eyes challenging me while its body obeyed. Somehow, I had tamed the nightmare, cast a spell over it. But sleeping things wake, and spells wear off, especially those cast by accident, and beneath its placid surface, I could feel the hollow boiling. Addison nudged my calf with his nose.
More whites will be coming. Will the beast let us pass?
Talk to it again, Emma said, her voice woozy and vague. Tell it to sod off. I searched for the words, but they'd gotten shy. I don't know how.
You did a minute ago, Addison said. It sounded like there was a demon inside you.
A minute ago, before I'd known I could do it, the words had been right there on my tongue, just waiting to be spoken. Now that I wanted them back, it was like trying to catch fish with bare hands. Every time I touched one, it slipped out of my grasp.
Go away!
I shouted. The words came in English. The hollow didn't move. I stiffened my back, glared into its inkpot eyes, and tried again.
Get out of here! Leave us alone!
English again. The hollow tilted its head like a curious dog, but was otherwise a statue.
Is he gone? Addison asked.
The others couldn't tell for sure, only I could see it.
Still there, I said. I don't know what's wrong.
I felt silly and deflated. Had my gift vanished so quickly?
Never mind, Emma said. Hollows aren't meant to be reasoned with anyway.
She stuck out a hand and tried to light a flame, but it fizzled. The effort seemed to sap her. I tightened my grip around her waist, lest she topple over.
"Save your strength, Matchstick," said Addison. "I'm sure we'll need it." "I'll fight it with cold hands if I have to," said Emma. "All that matters is we find the others before it's too late."
The others. I could see them still, their afterimage fading by the tracks. Horace's fine clothes a mess, Bronwyn's strength no match for the White's guns, Enoch dizzy from the blast, Hugh using the chaos to pull off Olive's heavy shoes and float her away, Olive caught by the heel and yanked down before she could rise out of reach, all of them weeping in terror, kicked onto the train at gunpoint, gone. Gone with the Imbrin we'd nearly killed ourselves to find, hurtling now through London's guts toward a fate worse than death. It's already too late, I thought. It was too late the moment Call's soldiers stormed Miss Wren's frozen hideout. It was too late the night we mistook Miss Peregrine's wicked brother for our beloved Imbrin. But I swore to myself that we'd find our friends and our Imbrin, no matter the cost, even if there were only bodies to recover, even if it meant adding our own to the pile. So, then, somewhere in the flashing dark was an escape to the street. A door, a staircase, an escalator, way off against the far wall. But how to reach them?
"Get the hell out of our way!"
I shouted at the hollow, giving it one last try. English, naturally. The hollow grunted like a cow, but didn't move. It was no use. The words were gone.
"Plan B," I said. "It won't listen to me, so we go around it. Hope it stays put."
"Go around it where?" said Emma.
To give it a wide berth, we'd have to wade through heaps of glass, but the shards would slice Emma's bare calves and Addison's paws to ribbons. I considered alternatives. I could carry the dog, but that still left Emma. I could find a sword-like piece of glass and stab the thing in the eyes, a technique that had served me well in the past, but if I didn't manage to kill it with the first strike, it would surely snap awake and kill us instead. The only other way around it was through a small, glass-free gap between the hollow and the wall. It was narrow, though, a foot, maybe a foot and a half, wide. A tight squeeze, even if we flattened our backs to the wall. I worried that getting so close to the hollow, or worse, touching it by accident, would break the fragile trance holding it in check. Short of growing wings and flying over its head, though, it seemed like our only option.
"Can you walk a little?" I asked Emma. "Or at least hobble?"
She locked her knees and loosened her grip on my waist, testing her weight.
"I can limp."
"Then here's what we're going to do. Slide past it, backs to the wall, through that gap there. It's not a lot of space, but if we're careful..."
Addison saw what I meant and shrank back into the phone booth.
"Do you think we should get so close to it?"
"Probably not."
"What if it wakes up while we're..."
"It won't," I said, faking confidence. "Just don't make any sudden moves, and whatever you do, don't touch it." You're our eyes now, Addison said. Bird, preserve us.
I chose a nice, long shard from the floor and slid it into my pocket. Shuffling two steps to the wall, we pressed our backs to the cold tiles and began inching toward the hollow. Its eyes moved as we did, locked on me. A few creeping side steps later, and we were enveloped by a pocket of hollow stink so foul it made my eyes water. Addison coughed, and Emma cupped a hand over her nose.
"Just a little farther," I said, my voice reedy with forced calm.
I took the glass from my pocket, gripping it with the pointed end out, then took another step, and another. We were close enough now that I could have touched the hollow with an outstretched arm. I heard its heart knocking inside its ribs, the beat quickening with each step we took. It was straining against me, fighting with every neuron to wrest my clumsy hands from its controls.
"Don't move," I said,
mouthing the words in English.
"You're mine. I control you. Don't move."
I sucked in my chest, lined up and laddered each vertebra against the wall, then crab-walked into the tight gap between the wall and the hollow.
"Don't move. Don't move."
Slide. Shuffle. Slide. I held my breath while the hollows quickened, wet and wheezing, a vile black mist blooming from its nostrils. The urge to devour us must have been excruciating. So was my urge to run, but I ignored it. That would have been acting like prey, not master.
"Don't move. Do not move."
Another few steps, a few more feet, and we'd be past it. Its shoulder a hair's breadth from my chest.
"Don't."
And then it did. In one swift motion, the hollow swiveled its head and pivoted its body to face me. I went rigid. "Don't move," I said, this time aloud, to the others. Addison buried his face between his paws, and Emma froze, her arm squeezing mine like a vice. I steeled myself for what was to come. Its tongues, its teeth, the end.
"Get back, get back, get back."
English, English, English. Seconds passed, during which, astonishingly, we weren't killed. But for the rising and falling of its chest, the creature seemingly had turned once again to stone. Experimentally, moving by millimeters, I slid along the wall. The hollow followed me with slight turns of its head, locked onto me like a compass needle, its body in perfect sympathy with mine. But it didn't follow, didn't open its jaws. If whatever spell I'd cast had been broken, we'd already be dead. The hollow was only watching me, awaiting instructions I didn't know how to give. "False alarm," I said, and Emma breathed an audible sigh of relief. We slid out of the gap, peeled ourselves from the wall, and hurried away as fast as Emma could limp. When we'd put a little distance between us and the hollow, I looked back. It had turned all the way around to face me.
"Stay,"
I muttered in English.
"Good."
We passed through a veil of steam, and the escalator came into view, frozen into stairs, its power cut. Around it glowed a halo of weak daylight, a tantalizing envoy from the world above. world of the living, world of now, a world where I had parents. They were here, both of them, in London, breathing this air, a stroll away. Oh, hi there. Unthinkable. Still more unthinkable. Not 5 minutes ago, I'd told my father everything. The Cliff's Notes version, anyway. I'm like Grandpa Portman was. I'm peculiar. They wouldn't understand, but at least now they knew. It would make my absence feel less like a betrayal. I could still hear my father's voice, begging me to come home. And as we limped toward the light, I had to fight a sudden shameful urge to shake off Emma's arm and run for it, to escape this suffocating dark, to find my parents and beg forgiveness, and then to crawl into their posh hotel bed and sleep. That was most unthinkable of all. I could never. I loved Emma, and I'd told her so, and I wouldn't leave her behind for anything. And not because I was noble or brave or chivalrous. I'm not any of those things. I was afraid that leaving her behind would rip me in half. And the others, our poor, doomed friends. We had to go after them. But how? A train hadn't entered the station since the one that spirited them away, and after the blast and gunshots that had rocked the place, I was sure there'd be no more coming. That left us two options, each one terrible. Go after them on foot through the tunnels and hope we didn't meet any more hollows, or climb the escalator and face whatever was waiting for us up there, most likely a white mop-up crew. Then regroup, reassess. I knew which option I preferred. I'd had enough of the dark, and more than enough of hollows. "Let's go up," I said, urging Emma toward the stalled escalator. "We'll find somewhere safe to plan our next move while you get your strength back."
"Absolutely not," she said. "We can't just abandon the others. Never mind how I feel."
"We aren't. But we need to be realistic. We're hurt and defenseless, and the others are probably miles away by now, out of the underground and halfway to somewhere else. How will we even find them?"
"The same way I found you," said Addison. "With my nose. Peculiar folk have an aroma all their own, you see. One which only dogs of my persuasion can sniff out. And you happen to be one powerfully odoriferous group of peculiars. Fear enhances it, I think. And skipping baths."
"Then we go after them," Emma said.
She pulled me toward the tracks with a surprising burst of strength. I resisted, tug-of-warring our linked arms.
"No, no. There's no way the trains are still running, and if we go in there on foot..." "I don't care if it's dangerous. I won't leave them."
"It isn't just dangerous, it's pointless. They're already gone, Emma." She took back her arm and started hobbling toward the tracks, stumbled, caught herself. "Say something," I mouthed to Addison, and he circled around to block her.
"I'm afraid he's right. If we follow on foot, our friend's scent trail will have dissipated long before we're able to find them. Even my profound abilities have limits."
Emma gazed into the tunnel, then back at me, her expression tortured. I held out my hand.
"Please, let's go. It doesn't mean we're giving up."
"All right," she said heavily. "All right."
But just as we were starting toward the escalator, someone called out from the dark, back along the tracks,
Over here.
The voice was weak, but familiar, the accent Russian. It was the folding man. Peering into the dark, I could just make out his crumpled form by the tracks, one arm raised. He'd been shot during the melee, and I assumed the whites had shoved him onto the train with the others. But there he lay, waving to us.
"Sergei!" cried Emma.
"You know him?" Addison said suspiciously.
"He was one of Miss Wren's peculiar refugees," I said, my ears pricking at the wail of distant sirens echoing down from the surface. Trouble was coming, maybe trouble disguised as help, and I worried that our best chance at a clean exit was slipping away. Then again, we couldn't just leave him. Addison scuttled toward the man, dodging the deepest reefs of glass. Emma let me take her arm again, and we shuffled after. Sergei was lying on his side, covered in glass and streaked with blood. The bullet had hit him somewhere vital. His wire-framed spectacles were cracked, and he was adjusting them, trying to get a good look at me.
"This miracle. This miracle," he rasped,
his voice thin as twice-strained tea.
"I heard you speak with monster's tongue. This miracle."
"It's not," I said, kneeling beside him. "It's gone. I've already lost it."
"If gift inside you is forever."
Footsteps and voices echoed from the escalator passage. I cleared away glass so I could get my hands under the folding man. "We're taking you with us," I said.
"Leave me,"
he croaked.
"I'll be gone soon enough."
Ignoring him, I slipped my hands beneath his body and lifted. He was ladder long, but light as a feather, and I held him in my arms like a big baby, his skinny legs dangling over my elbow, while his head lolled against my shoulder. Two figures banged down the last few escalator steps, and then stood at the bottom, rimmed by pale daylight and peering into the new dark. Emma pointed at the floor, and we sank quietly to our knees, hoping they'd miss us, hoping they were just civilians come to catch a train. But then I heard the squelch of a walkie-talkie, and they each fired up a flashlight, the beams shining against their bright reflective jackets. They might have been emergency responders, or whites disguised as such. I wasn't sure until, in synchrony, they peeled off wrap-around sunglasses.
Of course.
Our options had just narrowed by half. Now there were only the tracks, the tunnels. We could never outrun them, damaged as we were, but escape was still possible if they didn't see us, and they hadn't yet, amidst the chaos of the ruined station. Their searchlights dueled across the floor. Emma and I backed toward the tracks. If we could just slip into the tunnels unnoticed. But Addison, damn him, wasn't moving.
"Come on,"
I hissed. "They are ambulance drivers, and this man needs help," he said, too loudly, and right away the beams of light bounced up from the floor and whipped toward us.
"Stay where you are!"
one of the men boomed, unholstering a gun while the other fumbled for his walkie-talkie. Then two unexpected things happened in quick succession. The first was that, just as I was about to drop the folding man onto the tracks and dive after him with Emma, a thunderous horn blew from inside the tunnel, and a single brilliant headlight flashed into view. The rush of stale wind belonged, of course, to a train, running again somehow, despite the blast. The second thing, announced by a painful twinge in my gut, was that the hollow had come unstuck and was loping in our direction. The instant after I felt it, I saw it, too, plowing at us through a billow of steam, black lips peeled wide, tongues thrashing the air. We were trapped. If we ran for the stairs, we'd be shot and mauled. If we jumped onto the tracks, we'd be crushed by the train. And we couldn't escape onto the train because it would be 10 seconds at least before it stopped, and 12 before the doors opened, and 10 more before they shut again, and by then we'd be dead 3 ways. And so I did as I often do when I'm out of ideas. I looked to Emma. I could read in the desperation on her face that she understood the hopelessness of our situation, and in the stony set of her jaw, that she meant to act anyway. I remembered only as she began to stagger forward, palms out, that she couldn't see the hollow, and I tried to tell her, reach for her, stop her, but I couldn't get the words out, and couldn't grab her without dropping the folding man. And then Addison was alongside her, barking at the light, while Emma tried uselessly to make a flame. Spark! Spark! Nothing! Like a lighter low on juice. The white broke out laughing, pulled back the hammer of his gun, and aimed it at her. The hologast ran at me, howling in counterpoint to the squeal of train brakes behind me. That's when I knew the end had come, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. At that moment, something inside me relaxed, and as it did, the pain I felt whenever a hollow was near faded, too. That pain was like a high-pitched whine, and as it hushed, I discovered hidden beneath it another sound, a murmur at the edge of consciousness. A word. I dove for it, wrapped both arms around it, wound up and shouted it with all the force of a major league pitcher. Him! I said in a language not my own. It was only one syllable, but held volumes of meaning, and the moment it rattled from my throat, the result was instant. The hollow stopped running at me, stopped dead, skidding on its feet, then turned sharply to one side and lashed out a tongue that whipped across the platform and wrapped 3 times around the white's leg. Knocked off balance, he fired a shot that caromed off the ceiling, and then he was flipped upside down and hauled, thrashing and screaming, into the air. It took my friends a moment to realize what had happened. While they stood gaping and the other white shouted into his walkie-talkie, I heard train doors whoosh open behind me. Here was our moment. "Come on!" I shouted, and they did. Emma stumble running and Addison tangling her feet, and me trying to wedge the gangly and blood-slick folding man through the narrow doors, until we all crashed together across the threshold into the train car. More gunshots rang out, the white firing blindly at the hollow. The doors closed halfway, then popped back open. "Clear the doors, please," came a cheerful pre-recorded announcement. "His feet!" Emma said, pointing at the shoes at the end of the folding man's long legs, the toes of which were poking through the doors. I scrambled to kick his feet clear, and in the interminable seconds before the doors closed again, the dangling white fired more wild shots, until the hollow grew tired of him and flung him against the wall, where he slid to the floor in an unmoving heap. The other white scurried for the exit. "Him too," I tried to say, but it was too little, too late. The doors were closing, and with an awkward jolt, the train began to move. I looked around, grateful that the car we'd tumbled into was empty. What would regular people make of us? "Are you okay?" I asked Emma. She was sitting up, breathing hard, studying me intensely. "Thanks to you,"
she said. Did you really make Tholo do all that?
I think so, I said, not quite believing it myself.
That's amazing, she said quietly.
I couldn't tell if she was frightened, or impressed, or both.
We owe you our lives, said Addison, nuzzling his head sweetly against my arm. You're a very special boy.
The folding man laughed, and I looked down to see him grinning at me through a mask of pain.
You see, he said, I told you. It's a miracle.
Then his face turned serious. He grabbed my hand and pressed a small square of paper into it. A photograph.
My wife. My child, he said. Taken by our enemy long ago. If you find others, perhaps...
I glanced at the photo and got a shock. It was a wallet-sized portrait of a woman holding a baby. Sergei had clearly been carrying it with him a long time. Though the people in the photo were pleasant enough, the photo itself, or the negative, had been seriously damaged, perhaps narrowly survived a fire, exposed to such heat that the faces were warped and fragmented. Sergei had never mentioned his family before now. All he'd talked about since we met him was raising an army of peculiars, going loop to loop to recruit able-bodied survivors of the raids and purges. He never told us what he wanted an army for. To get them back.
We'll find them too, I said.
We both knew this was far-fetched, but it was what he needed to hear.
Thank you,
he said, and relaxed into a spreading pool of blood.
He doesn't have long, Addison said, moving to lick Sergei's face.
I might have enough heat to cauterize the wound, said Emma.
Scooting toward him, she began rubbing her hands together. Addison nosed the folding man's shirt near his abdomen.
Here. He's hurt here.
Emma put her hands on either side of the spot, and at the sizzle of flesh, I stood up, feeling faint. I looked out the window. We were still pulling out of the station, slowed perhaps by debris on the tracks. The emergency light's SOS flicker picked details from the dark at random. The body of a dead white, half buried in glass. The crumpled phone booth, scene of my breakthrough. The hollow, I registered its form with a shock, trotting on the platform alongside us, a few cars back, casual as a jogger.
Stop! Stay away!
I spat at the window, in English. My head wasn't clear, the hurt and the whine getting in the way again. We picked up speed and passed into the tunnel. I pressed my face to the glass, angling backward for another glimpse. It was dark, dark, and then, in a burst of light, like a camera flash, I saw the hollow as a momentary still image, flying, its feet lifting from the platform, tongues lassoing the rail of the last car. Miracle. Curse. I hadn't quite worked out the difference. I took his legs, and Emma his arms, and gently we lifted Sergei onto a long bench seat, where beneath an advertisement for bake-at-home pizza, he lay blacked out and rocking with the motion of the train. If he was going to die, it seemed wrong that he should have to do so on the floor. Emma pulled up his thin shirt.
The bleeding stopped, she reported. But he'll die if he doesn't see the inside of a hospital soon.
He may die anyway, said Addison. Especially in a hospital here in the present. Imagine, he wakes up in 3 days' time, side healed, but everything else failing,
aged 200 and bird knows what.
That may be, Emma replied. Then again, I'll be surprised if in 3 days' time any of us are alive, in any condition whatsoever. I'm not sure what more we can do for him.
I'd heard them mention this deadline before. 2 or 3 days was the longest any peculiar who'd lived in a loop could stay in the present without aging forward. It was long enough for them to visit the present, but never to stay. Long enough to travel between loops, but short enough that they were never tempted to linger. Only daredevils and Imbrins made excursions into the present longer than a few hours. The consequences of a delay were too grave. Emma rose, looking sickly in the pale yellow light, then tottered on her feet and grabbed for one of the train's stanchions. I took her hand and made her sit next to me, and she slumped against my side, exhausted beyond measure. We both were. I hadn't slept properly in days, hadn't eaten properly either, aside from the few opportunities we'd had to gorge ourselves like pigs. I'd been running and terrified and wearing these damned blister-making shoes since I couldn't remember when, but more than that, every time I spoke hollow, it seemed to carve something out of me that I didn't know how to put back. It made me feel tired to a degree that was wholly new, absolutely subterranean. I'd discovered a fresh vein inside me, a new source of power to mine, but it was depletable and finite, and I wondered if by using it up, I was using myself up, too. I'd worry about that another time. For now, I tried to savor a rare moment of peace, my arm around Emma and her head on my shoulder, just breathing. Selfishly, perhaps, I didn't mention the hollow that had chased our train. What could any of us do about it? It would either catch us or not, kill us or not. The next time it found us, and I was sure there would be a next time, I would either find the words to stay its tongues, or I wouldn't. I watched Addison hop onto the seat across from us, unlock a window with his paw, and crack it open. The angry sound of the train and a warm funk of tunnel air came rushing in, and he sat reading it with his nose, eyes bright and snout twitching. The air smelled like stale sweat and dry rot to me, but he seemed to catch something subtler, something that required careful interpretation. "Can you smell them?" I asked. The dog heard me, but took a long moment to reply, his eyes aimed at the ceiling as if finishing a thought.
"I can," he said. "Their trail is nice and crisp, too."
Even at this high speed, he could pick up the minutes-old traces of peculiars who'd been enclosed in an earlier train car. I was impressed, and told him so.
"Thank you, but I can't take all the credit," he said. "Someone must have pushed open a window in their car, too. Otherwise the trail would be much fainter. Perhaps Miss Wren did it, knowing I would try to follow."
"She knew you were here?" I asked. "How did you find us?" Emma said.
"Just a moment," Addison said sharply.
The train was slowing into a station, the windows flashing from tunnel black to tile white. He stuck his nose out the window and closed his eyes, lost in concentration.
"I don't think they got off here, but be ready in any case."
Emma and I stood, doing our best to shield the folding man from view. I saw with some relief that there weren't many people waiting on the platform. Funny there were any at all, or that trains were still running. It was as if nothing had happened. The whites had made sure of it, I suspected, in hopes we'd take the bait, jump onto a train, and make it simple for them to round us up. We certainly wouldn't be hard to spot amongst modern London's workday commuters.
look casual, I said, like you belong here. This seemed to strike Emma as funny, and she stifled a laugh. It was funny, I guess, inasmuch as we belonged nowhere in particular, least of all here. The train stopped and the doors slid open. Addison sniffed the air deeply as a bookish woman in a peacoat stepped into our car. Seeing us, her mouth fell open, and then she turned smartly and walked out again. Nope, no thanks. I couldn't blame her. We were filthy, freakish-looking in bizarre old clothes, and splashed with blood. We probably looked like we'd just killed the poor man beside us.
Look casual, Emma said, and snorted.
Addison withdrew his nose from the window.
We're on the right track, he said. Miss Wren and the others definitely passed this way.
They didn't get off here? I asked.
I don't think so. But if I don't smell them in the next station, we'll know we've gone too far.
The doors smacked closed, and with an electric whine, we were off again. I was about to suggest we find a change of clothes when Emma jolted beside me, as if she'd just remembered something.
Addison, she said, what happened to Fiona and Claire?
At the mention of their names, a nauseating new wave of worry shot through me. We'd last seen them at Miss Wren's menagerie, where the elder girl had stayed behind with Claire, who was too ill to travel. Call told us he'd raided the menagerie and captured the girls, but he also told us Addison was dead, so clearly his information couldn't be trusted.
Ah, said Addison, nodding gravely. It's bad news, I'm afraid. Part of me, I admit, was hoping you wouldn't ask.
Emma's face drained of color.
Tell us.
Of course, he said. Shortly after your party left, we were raided by a gang of whites. We threw Armageddon eggs at them, then scattered and hid. The larger girl, with the unkempt hair.
Fiona, I said, heart thudding.
She used her facility with plants to hide us, in trees and under new-grown brush. We were so well camouflaged that it would have taken days for the whites to root us all out. But they gassed us and drove us into the open.
Gas!
Emma cried.
The bastards swore they'd never use it again!
It appears they lied, said Addison.
I had seen a photo once, in one of Miss Peregrine's albums, of such an attack. Whites in ghostly masks with breathing canisters, standing around casually as they launched clouds of poison gas into the air. Although the stuff wasn't fatal, it made your lungs and throat burn, caused terrible pain, and was rumored to trap Imbrans in their bird form.
When they'd rounded us up, Addison went on, we were interrogated as to the whereabouts of Miss Wren. They turned her tower inside out, searching for maps, diaries, I don't know what, and when poor Deirdre tried to stop them, they shot her.
The emu Raff's long face flashed before me, gawky, gap-toothed and sweet, and my stomach lurched. What kind of person could kill such a creature?
God, that's awful, I said.
Awful, Emma agreed perfunctorily. And the girls?
The small one was captured by the whites, Addison said. And the other... Well, there was a scuffle with some of the soldiers, and they were near the cliff's edge, and she fell.
I blinked at him.
What?
For a moment, the world blurred, then snapped back into focus. Emma stiffened, but her face betrayed nothing.
What do you mean, fell? Fell how far?
It was a sheer drop. 1,000 feet at least,
His fleshy jowls drooped.
I'm so sorry.
I sat down heavily. Emma kept standing, her hands white-knuckling the rail.
No,
she said firmly.
No, that can't be. Perhaps she grabbed onto something on the way down, a branch or a ledge.
Addison studied the gum-spackled floor.
It's possible.
Or the trees below cushioned her fall and caught her like a net. She can speak to them, you know?
Yes,
he said.
One can always hope.
I tried to imagine being cushioned by a spiky pine tree after such a fall. It didn't seem possible. I saw the small hope Emma had kindled wink out, and then her legs began to tremble, and she let go of the rail and thumped down onto the seat beside me. She looked at Addison with wet eyes.
I'm sorry about your friend.
He nodded.
Same to you.
None of this ever would have happened if Miss Peregrine were here,
she whispered, and then, quietly, she bowed her head and began to cry. I wanted to put my arms around her, but somehow it felt like I'd be intruding on a private moment, claiming it for myself when really it was hers alone. So instead I sat and looked at my hands and let her mourn her lost friend. Addison turned away out of respect, I think, and because the train was slowing into another station. The doors opened. Addison stuck his head out the window, sniffed the air on the platform, growled at someone who'd tried to enter our car, then came back inside. By the time the doors closed again, Emma had lifted her head and wiped away her tears. I squeezed her hand. Are you all right? I said, wishing I could think of something more or better to say than that.
I have to be, don't I? She said. For the ones who are still alive.
To some it might have seemed callous, the way she boxed up her pain and set it aside, but I knew her well enough now to understand. She had a heart the size of France, and the lucky few whom she loved with it were loved with every square inch, but its size made it dangerous, too. If she let it feel everything, she'd be wrecked. So she had to tame it, shush it, shut it up, float the worst pains off to an island that was quickly filling with them, where she would go to live one day.
Go on, she said to Addison. What happened to Claire?
The whites marched off with her, gagged her two mouths and tossed her into a sack.
But she was alive,
I said,
and biting as of noon yesterday. Then we buried Deirdre in our little cemetery, and I hightailed it for London to find Miss Wren and warn all of you. One of Miss Wren's pigeons led me to a hideaway, and while I was pleased to see that you had arrived before me, unfortunately, so had the whites. Their siege had already begun, and I was forced to watch helplessly as they stormed the building and, well, you know the rest. I followed as you were led away to the underground. When that blast went off, I saw an opportunity to aid you, and took it.
Thank you for that, I said, realizing we hadn't yet acknowledged the debt we owed him. If you hadn't dragged us away when you did...
Yes, well, no need to dwell on hypothetical unpleasantries, he said. But in return for my gallantry, I was rather hoping you would assist me in rescuing Miss Wren from the whites, as unlikely as that sounds. She means everything to me, you see.
It was Miss Wren he'd wanted to snatch away from the whites, not us, but we were the realistic save, farther from the train, and he'd made a snap decision and taken what he could get. Of course we'll help, I said. Isn't that what we're doing now?
Yes, yes, he said. But you must realize, as an Imbrin, Miss Wren is more valuable to the whites than peculiar children, and thus she may prove more difficult to free. I worry that if by some miracle we are lucky enough to rescue your friends.
Now wait a second, I snapped. Who says she's more...
No, it's true, Emma said. She'll be under heavier lock and key, no question. But we won't leave her behind. We're not leaving anyone else behind ever again. You have our word as peculiars.
The dog seemed satisfied with that.
Thank you, he said,
and then his ears flattened. He hopped up onto a seat to look out the window as we pulled into the next station.
Hide yourselves, he said, ducking down. There are enemies near.
The whites were expecting us. I glimpsed two of them waiting on the platform, dressed as police officers among a scattering of commuters. They were scanning the cars as our train pulled into the station. We dropped down below the windows, hoping they'd miss us, but I knew they wouldn't. The one with the walkie-talkie had radioed ahead. They must have known we were on this train. Now all they had to do was search it. It came to a stop and people began filing on board, though not into our car. I risked a peek through the open doors and saw one of the whites down the platform, speed walking in our direction as he eyeballed each car.
One's coming this way, I muttered.
How's your fire, Em?
Running on empty, she replied.
He was getting close. Four cars away. Three.
Then get ready to run.
Two cars away. Then a soft, recorded voice. Mind the closing doors, please.
Hold the train!
The white shouted, but the doors were already closing. He stuck an arm through. The doors bounced open again. He got on board, into the car next to ours. My eyes went to the door that connected our cars. It was locked with a chain, thank God for small mercies. The doors snicked shut and the train began to move. We shifted the folding man onto the floor and huddled with him in a spot where we couldn't be seen from the White's car.
What can we do? Said Emma. The moment this train stops again, he'll come straight in here and find us.
Are we absolutely certain he's a white? Asked Addison.
Do cats grow on trees? Emma replied.
Not in this part of the world.
Then of course we aren't. But when it comes to whites, there's an old saying. If you're not sure, assume.
Okay, then, I said. The second those doors open, we run for the exit. Addison sighed.
All this fleeing, he said disdainfully, as if he were a gourmand and someone had offered him a limp square of American cheese. There's no imagination in it. Mightn't we try sneaking, blending in? There's artistry in that. Then we could simply walk away, gracefully unnoticed.
I hate fleeing as much as anyone, I said. But Emma and I look like 19th-century axe murderers, and you're a dog who wears glasses. We're bound to be noticed.
Until they start manufacturing canine contact lenses, I'm stuck with these, Addison grumbled.
Where's that hologast when you need him? Said Emma offhandedly.
Run over by a train, if we're lucky, I said.
And what do you mean by that? Only that he came in quite handy earlier.
And before that he nearly killed us. Twice! No, three times! Whatever it is I've been doing to control it has been half by accident, and the moment I'm not able to, we're dead. Emma didn't respond right away, but studied me for a moment, and then took my hand, all caked in grime, and kissed it gently, once, twice. "What was that for?" I said, surprised.
"You have no idea, do you?"
"Of what?"
"How completely miraculous you are."
Addison groaned.
"You have an amazing talent," Emma whispered. "I'm certain all you need is a little practice."
"Maybe, but practicing something usually means failing at it for a while, and failing at this means people get killed." Emma squeezed my hand.
"Well, there's nothing like a little pressure to help you hone a new skill."
I tried to smile, but couldn't muster one. My heart hurt too much at the thought of all the damage I could cause. This thing I could do felt like a loaded weapon I didn't know how to use. Hell, I didn't even know which end to point away from me. Better to set it down than have it blow up in my hands. We heard a noise at the other end of the car, and looked up to see the door opening. That one wasn't chained, and now a pair of leather-clad teenagers stumbled into our car, a boy and a girl, laughing and passing a lit cigarette between them.
"We'll get in trouble," the girl said, kissing his neck.
The boy brushed a foppish wave of hair from his eyes. "I do this all the time, sweetheart." Then he saw us, and froze, his eyebrows parabolic. The door they'd come through banged closed behind them. "Hey," I said casually, as if we weren't crouched on the floor with a dying man covered in blood.
"What's up?"
"Don't freak out. Don't give us away." The boy wrinkled his brow.
"Are you..." "In costume," I replied. "Got carried away with the fake blood."
"Oh," said the boy, clearly not believing me. The girl stared at the folding man.
"Is he?"
"Drunk," said Emma. "Soused out of his brain, which is how he came to spill all our fake blood on the floor, and himself."
"And us," said Addison.
The teens' heads snapped toward him, their eyes going wider still.
"You goon," Emma muttered. "Keep quiet."
The boy raised a trembling hand and pointed at the dog.
"Did he just..."
Addison had said only two words. We might have played it off as a trick of echoes, something other than what it seemed, but he was too proud to play dumb.
"Of course I didn't," he said, raising his nose in the air. "Dogs can't speak English, nor any human language, save in one notable exception, Luxembourgish, which is only comprehensible to bankers and Luxembourgers, and therefore hardly of any use at all. No, you've eaten something disagreeable, and are having a nightmare, that's all. Now, if you wouldn't mind terribly, my friends need to borrow your clothes. Please disrobe at once."
Pallid and shaking, the boy started to remove his leather jacket, but he'd only wriggled one arm free when his knees gave out and he fainted to the floor. And then the girl began to scream, and she didn't stop. In an instant, the white was banging at the chained door, his blank eyes flashing murder. "So much for sneaking away," I said. Addison turned to look at him.
"Definitely a white," he said, nodding sagely.
"I'm so glad we put that mystery to rest," said Emma.
There was a jolt and a squeal of brakes. We were coming into a station. I pulled Emma to her feet and prepared to run.
"What about Sergei?"
Emma said, whipping around to look back at him. It would be hard enough to outrun a pair of whites with Emma still recovering her strength. With the folding man in my arms, it would be impossible. "We'll have to leave."